top of the shamrock to you.
Hi, friends. Welcome to a special bonus episode of Trashy Divorces. Happy St. Patrick's Day.
I hope you're enjoying your green beer.
It really ain't easy being green, Stacy. Today, we're using the theme song, Being Green. It's a popular song written by Joe Raposo, originally performed by...
Jim Henson as Kermit the Frog. And yeah, that was both Sesame Street and The Muppet Show. I forgot that he had such... that's probably where I first saw Kermit the Frog. One of my early crushes, it turns out.
Jim Henson has a thousand heroes. Being Green is a heartwarming classic about embracing one's differences and accepting oneself as you really are. It's been covered by everybody.
Heartwarming classic. Yeah, Frank Sinatra, Lena Horne, Ray Charles, and even Mandy Patinkin.
It's a hella song.
It's pretty good.
I couldn't come up with a better theme to tie this bonus episode together.
Irish eyes are a smiling, but nope.
So, yeah, being green.
Who do we, tell me about who you've got today.
Somebody who truly identifies with the color green. I have the trashy almost divorced.
The original JG.
The original green girl. Juliet Gordon-Lowe, founder of the Girl Scouts. Not quite a divorce, but an amazing story. Very comfortable. Green is a very flattering skin tone. It's an amazing story. I actually did this back in the summertime at a live show, but wanted to get it on tape for the Sunday episode and couldn't find a better connection than the 108th anniversary of the Girl Scouts being green. God, I love her story. There may be just a few tears at the end.
And then we jump into mine.
Oh, Lord, you had...
It's hard-hitting, but true.
Hard-hitting. Hard-hitting reporting from Trashy Divorces.
Yeah, this is the very tough relationship between Kermit the Frog and Miss Piggy. Lots of violence there, I'm not going to lie. This episode's harder than some. I also cry at the end. No, I don't.
Do it if you can, do it if you must. Hey, friends...
Here's what I think the link is going to be, and I'm going to make this happen while you're editing so we can fix this if need
perfect,
be.
Perfect, because we have an exciting announcement.
I believe the link is going to be bit.ly/trashcandyquarantine. Thank you, Inman. That link should take you to a catalog of free material on Patreon. We're pulling stuff out of the paywall for everybody who is currently... adopting our lifestyle and not loving it. So you can listen to several hours of stuff each week for your comedy enjoyment during this time of international crisis.
Yeah, we don't have much. We are still putting out fresh new content. Ooh, we have some really... I can't even wait to tell our patrons that Fun with Dawn is coming back tomorrow. We've got Trashy Tutors. We have Ocean's 11. We have Church of the Flaming Dumpster Fire. A million things happening on Patreon. Bunch of brand new content. But we are going to be pulling some of our old content out of the vault. Some of our best stories are going up this week. Some true classics. We've had a good time going back through and listening to like, ooh, which ones might be fun to put out. So
absolutely.
Check out bit.ly.
bit.ly/trashcandyquarantine for material. And I'm going to make that happen right this minute.
Fantastic.
So we can fix this as needed.
But for our listeners, we always record our intros when we're done recording the episode. So technically we're done and we're on to editing.
Mm-hmm.
But you're listening now and just about to get lucky with the stories of Juliet Gordon-Lowe. And Miss Piggy and Kermit, it's so good. You ready to do this?
Let's go, go, go. Oh, sorry. Let's low, low, low.
It ain't easy being trashy, y'all.
Cue the music. So, Alicia, you've got a it's not easy being green kind of story. From the archives of greenness?
The Halls of Green.
The Halls of Green.
Any former Girl Scouts out there?
Probably not.
Any Girl Scout leaders?
It's not really a thing.
It ain't easy being green, am I right? I was a Girl Scout for a long time. I was a Girl Scout leader for my niece's troop all through her elementary school days. As a former scout and troop leader, I have a deep and abiding love for the Girl Scout organization, which celebrated its 108th birthday this year.
Happy
just
birthday.
Just last week, back on March the 12th.
There you go. That's quite an accomplishment.
Today, I'm wearing my love for being green, and I'm going to tell you the story, the trashy divorces story, the hidden undercover story of the founder of the Girl Scouts, Juliette Gordon-Lowe.
Tuck that away for trivia night.
All you Girl Scouts, this one's for you. On my honor, I will do my best to give the story justice, according to the Girl Scout law. It's such a good story. Juliette Gordon-Lowe wasn't technically divorced when her husband died in 1905. They'd been separated for a lot of years, but no divorce. But there's a whole story to get there and a whole story that happens after. You ready?
Let's do it.
Juliette McGill Kinsey Gordon is born on Halloween. Halloween baby, October 31st, 1860. All right. And bless that child's uncle, Juliette McGill Kinsey Gordon. Her uncle gives her the nickname of Daisy. So that's what we're going to call her throughout the story because it's
okay, so it
a
sticks.
Little bit less to say. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
That's why the Girl Scouts' littlest ones are called Daisies, is after her name.
Cool. I totally knew that, too. So I just remember brownies as the pre-Girl Scout.
You're
Scout
a Daisy
thing.
Before you're a brownie.
They get you young then.
That's how they get you. Daisies are cute. They have little blue uniforms. Daisies are adorable.
Okay.
And then you're a brownie and then you're a Girl Scout. And then there are different levels that happen after that. But those are probably the three most popular.
And then you're old enough to make decisions for yourself.
Daisy is a Halloween baby. She's a Scorpio. Scorpios, y'all, when they fall deeply. Scorpio is our water sign, and of all the waters, Scorpio is, next to Pisces, the deepest depth of liquid. There's no fakery with the Scorpio. Scorpio's intentions are always super clear. Big life tip, don't cross a Scorpio. It's going to go badly. Halloween 1860. Don't know if you know what else is going on in 1860.
Oh, were there things?
Well, the South is about to enter the Civil War. So Daisy's born in Savannah.
I think you mean the War of Northern Aggression?
That is.
Which
yep.
was kicked off by Southerners shelling a Northern military installation. But yeah, Northern Aggression, that's it.
Daisy is the second of what will become six children in her family. Her daddy is a cotton broker. Her mama is a Northern belle, which is a little bit of a different flavor of the world. But her mama's people pretty much found Chicago, so they have some high influence. Her dad, super important in the South, so influential parents on both sides. Daisy's grandpa is the president of a little thing called the Central Railway and Banking Company.
That sounds important.
It's the first set of rails from inland Georgia to Savannah, where the port is.
Seems important.
Yeah.
For commodity trading.
We're looking at a lot of money.
So money. Okay.
6 months after Daisy is born, Daddy goes off to fight in the Wawa. Trying to say it super Southern.
For the wrong side, but okay.
So let's take a minute just to note here what the value is of a woman in 1860. Barbara Welter, pious, pure, domestic, submissive. That is what society looks for in a white society looks for in a gal. Daisy will remain in Savannah with her mama until 1864. When troops are coming hot and heavy in the march through Georgia, mama's going to pack everybody up. They hightail it over to a little town called Thunderbolt, Georgia.
Wow. Is that still real? Is that a place today?
Oh, I'm not sure.
Ooh.
Thunderbolt, Georgia.
Well,
if you're from Thunderbolt, we want to hear from you.
Next time we're chilling in Savannah, we need to see how far. That can't be. It's got to be just up the swamp road or whatever to Thunderbolt.
Not sure if you know this. But in Sherman's march through Georgia,
march to the sea,
It is a Union victory.
It is that. Spoilers for how the Civil War turned out.
Spoilers.
If you're not aware, go watch tons of History Channel circa 1996. They've got it all, or they did.
Well, Sherman comes to visit the family a bunch. He is friends with Mom's brother.
Oh, because they're Chicago.
Exactly.
Okay.
Sherman kindly...
What a small world.
Spider webs.
Hi, you just burned the entire state. How are things?
Hey, buddy, good to see ya. Now, Sherman is kind enough to get the family an escort so they can travel safely back up to Chicago.
Really mixed feelings on...
It's all who you know. It's... Grease in the palms. So once Andrew Johnson issues the amnesty proclamation...
So, okay, so after Reconstruction. So Lincoln is killed and Johnson, okay.
Dad can rejoin the family, which he does, and then picks up the family and they all head back down to Savannah. Okay. Daisy, as a kid, is not really academic in any true sense. She likes to write poetry. She puts on plays with her friends. She starts a little newspaper. She'll found a little club with her buddies called the Helpful Hands Club. Her family calls her Crazy Daisy because she's so eccentric. Her cousin Caroline will describe Daisy.
Smart girls are eccentric.
By saying... While you never knew what she would do next, she always did what she made up her mind to do.
She's smart and creative. There's a screw loose with that one.
Well, from Trastrology, Hard Candy by Counting Crows is my Scorpio song, Never Just an Ordinary Girl. Like, Julia Gordon-Lowe is just the epitome of this. Daisy, besides being Crazy Daisy, a little eccentric, is also accident prone. She suffers from all kinds of illnesses. She has recurring bouts of malaria, brain fever, and frequent ear infections.
I wonder if the ear infection, because I'm guessing that would be encephalitis. I'm guessing she's, do we know what brain fever is in modern parlance?
I did not pick up my medical degree on the way to the Trashy Divorces recording table
I'm
today.
Not aware of like old-timey illnesses like... I got foot fever, you know, like brain fever. Like, it's usually a whole body thing. I got pinky fever. It's driving me crazy lately.
I thought it was bad when I caught the Saturday night fever, but that ended Sunday morning. Okay. When Daisy's 12, she's sent to boarding school. And from there, she shuffles around to a few different schools in New Jersey, in Virginia, ending up at a French finishing school in New York City by 1880, where she is a member of a secret sorority called Theta Tau, where you have meetings and get badges. Daisy's a great painter. She's a really good artist. And she is certainly prepping for what the world and her family thinks that she should be. A proper lady who will get married and be obedient and have babies and do all the things that, how did our historian put it, pious and submissive and...
Yeah, yeah. Let's get you to conform.
That's it.
Little Crazy Daisy. No.
Is Daisy going to do that?
Probably not.
She's her own creature and she isn't super logical about all the things. She's crap at managing money and she is...
I really feel that.
A pet project adopter. Like, we can't go back and re-diagnose, but some minds have a proclivity, often ADHD minds. There are different types of personalities that are drawn into. You pick up a project, you love that project for 5 minutes, and then you drop that project.
Right.
She's a lot like that. Her brother will write, 2 + 2 by no means equals 4 to her. Okay. But by 1880... Sadly, Daisy's sister Alice dies, and Daisy comes home to Savannah to be with her family and take care of things because Mama is having a hard time. So here we're going to leave Daisy on the Trashy Divorces Depot in Savannah.
Sure.
Very young, very pretty.
Right. Smells like gun smoke and cotton.
Very Daisy. Let's meet the groom.
Okay. Not the founder of the Girl Scouts.
No. William Lowe. He's born on August 3rd. He's a Leo baby. So the Leo Scorpio match is not a recommended match from the get-go. Check your rising and your moon signs, but let's dip into these two and see how it goes. William is born in 1860. Same birth year, but he's born in Newport, Rhode Island. His parents are spending the summer there, which means they're wealthy.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
So for all of history, when people have a place where they summer.
Uh-huh.
They're rich. Okay. Just checking.
Well, if you're a summering in Newport, Rhode Island, you have cash and you've had cash since the beginning of time.
I think if you summer anywhere, you're probably.
William's father is a Scottish immigrant shipbuilder and a cotton merchant. William's mom is a Southern belle from Georgia. The Lowes have a home on Lafayette Square in Savannah. Now, both the Gordon family and the Lowe family have known each other for a long time. Both their dads are cotton brokers. Their homes are just a few blocks away. The Gordon family lives on Wright Square in Savannah. So, all very close.
Mm-hmm.
William's mother...
Is there a left square in Savannah? No, I'm kidding.
I may need to do a dirty digs on Savannah. It's kind of a fascinating story
Savannah's a very cool city.
It's an interesting town.
Not been there before. It's lovely.
Poor William. His mom dies when he's 3. And his grandma will come on down from North Georgia to Savannah, to the Low Country, to help take care of William and his sisters. She's going to stay through the Wawa while William's dad is trying to protect what he has. But once the war ends, William's dad is like, hey, England's got to be a better place to grow up than Reconstructionist era South, which has been decimated by the Civil War.
It is hard to believe that dad wasn't right there. And dad is Scottish, is that right?
Correct.
Okay, so... this all actually makes quite a bit of sense.
So by the fall of 1867, the Lowe family is back in England with a suitable staff and proper educations and all that jazz. But Dad Andrew Lowe still comes to Savannah every fall because he needs to check on his business and entertain, naturally. He will bring William's older sisters when he comes over to America. They're making good marriages. William is still chilling in England. He has all the proper schools and the proper clubs. A cousin at the time describes William as looking like a Greek god and having beautiful manners.
Okay.
Say what you will, Stacey. He's a good horseman. He fits right on into the Victorian upper crust. And oh yeah, here's what you don't know. He's the only boy in the family, so he's going to be set up for life financially because...
Right. So he's a princeling, basically.
Exactly.
Okay.
He's not actually interested, William, in the family business, but what William does appreciate is cash.
Hmm. That's strange, that.
So in 1882, William's dad is injured, and instead of dad coming to Savannah that year in the fall, old William comes on over to Savannah, where, whoa, new blood, fresh blood. You got a lot of money?
And you look like a Greek god?
You're the new eligible man in town?
You're a horseman?
You look tip-top in Victorian clothing? He is at the top of the list of every society lady. Like, he is the hot get of that season in Savannah.
Did they joke about, were there headlines in the paper? Because this is L-O-W-E, is that how it's spelled?
No E, just L-O-W.
Really? So it really was the Low Country. Okay. That was a pun.
William's wealth and good looks make life pretty good for William.
I hear that that's effective for most people.
So let's get William back on over to the boat. Hot ticket. Landing at the trashy divorces depot in Savannah. Juliet and William meet. She's 22, posh, polished, marriageable age. And Daisy has fallen crazy in love with Greek god, tip-top dresser.
Fresh from London.
William.
Whatever.
Now, one thing to let you know, in January of 1885, Daisy, who has always been prone to ear infections, is going to get another one. and she will persuade her doctor. This is a world where antibiotics do not exist yet. She persuades her doctor to go ahead and just use silver nitrate in her ear. It'll be fine.
It occurs to me.
Dear listener, it was not fine.
It occurs to me that's probably not a great thing to do. So what happened?
It ends up doing much more damage to the ear and will cause partial hearing loss.
Just okay.
Put that on a post-it.
How old? She's in her 20s here, right?
Early 20s.
Early 20s. Mm-hmm. Okay. So she's partially deaf now. Great.
So there's talk of marriage.
But she can't hear it. Sorry.
Both of their fathers are like, no.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So Lo and Gordon maybe realize that these two are not, it's a Leo-Scorpio match. It'll never work.
That's probably what they were saying, too.
That's exactly. I don't know if they looked at their natal charts or whatever, but they realize that these kids are not suited for each other long term. It could have been that William was so very British and proper fluff and stuff. And Juliet, even though she did attend boarding school, was like a little bit more homey. She's close to her family. Her family Summers in North Georgia, not Rhode Island, right? Like, it's just different worlds. But by 1886, early 1886, they have broken down both fathers. William's dad is like, hey, give it a year. If you were of the same mind in a year, great.
He's like date for a year and see what you think. Okay.
Like, just wait for a year. If you guys still want to get married in a year, awesome.
That seems very practical. I mean, I'm sure the kids were furious, but that seems very practical from a... If you plan to spend your life together, you like, sure. What's it matter if you're 23 or 24 when you get married?
So dad, in agreement for this, says, hey, William, I'm going to give you my Savannah properties, which will provide an income of about £3,000 a year. This is early 1886. But William's dad passes away in the summer of 1886. And now William is not just getting the stuff that dad promised upon his marriage.
Right.
But all of dad's property wealth and the wedding is on.
With no brothers to split anything with.
Right. So William is still in England, literally waiting for it to cool off so he can accompany his father's body back to Savannah for burial.
Wow.
Well, his dad wants to be buried there.
No, that's right. I just hadn't thought
it.
Like,
you can't travel.
Put that thing on a boat when it's 80 degrees. Like, oh, what a nightmare.
So the body is literally chilling in England until they can get on a boat. In the meantime, William is sending cash to Juliet, who is outfitting the home on Lafayette Square, where they will live when the big day arrives. She's putting up curtains and fixtures and putting in hardwoods. They have to be in the parlor, and oh, this is kind of neat. Just a few days before the wedding, one of Savannah's first telephones is installed in the house.
Okay.
They have that kind of money.
They're early adopters.
The wedding happens December 21st, 1886, at Christ Church. A little fun fact here. She picks the same day her parents got married for good luck. So there's your... The wedding is precious. 8 bridesmaids, newlyweds headed out to leave for their honeymoon on St. Catherine's Island, just south of Savannah. There's the traditional shower of tossing rice at the couple. Every Girl Scout knows this story, and a grain of rice embeds into Juliet's ear. An infection sets in.
Oh, my God.
And now she loses her hearing completely.
In both ears? Like, she is now deaf? Or is that still the same ear with the silver nitrate?
Here, there's some contention about which ears it happened to, but I will say that she is hearing impaired for the rest of her life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Wow. Antibiotics, man.
The additional hearing loss will cause Daisy to have periods of depression and what has been described as melancholy. But let's give her a few years and a little gumption, and the hearing loss will also play to her advantage because she never hears the word no. Sorry, can't hear you. like whatever she can hear, like, yeah. I can't hear you. She's determined.
So she's using her. She actually has selective hearing.
William and Daisy are going to hang in Savannah for the first few months, but they're going to go over to England, where when Daisy gets there, like, she's wrecked. She misses everything about home in the South and her family and the streets in Savannah. She's crying. She's depressed. I don't care about setting up this house. I don't care about anything. Like, she's 26. She's away from everything she's ever known. And William's whole family, who knows England, been with England, they know what all the curtains look like.
Right, yeah.
I'm like, what the hell do we do with her? So they send for Daisy's mom, who comes right on over and fixes Daisy right up. Like, sometimes you just need your mama. Mm-hmm. Mom gets the house that, like, mom helps.
Yeah.
So even when William and Daisy return back to Savannah for future visits, like, things aren't already great. He'll stay at the Low House. She'll stay with her parents at the Gordon House. Like, when they come back to Savannah, they do not stay together. But in England, they're kind of kicking it. They're doing the rich people country thing. Juliet is presented at court. They fox hunt. They have house parties. They shoot. They hunt. It's the London season. There's a lot going on. Oh. William Lowe is like BFFs with the Prince of Wales, future King Fast Eddie the VII.
Okay. It just occurred to me as well, though, if she became significantly disabled in, you know, immediately after her wedding, then she was still grappling with how you deal with isolation of that. Like, that.
There's a lot going on.
It makes sense that a hop across the pond might not have worked well there at the beginning.
Well, and like, what purposes are, like, it's idle rich people play. Mm-hmm. Like, they play a lot of cards, they hunt, they drink to excess. Like, all right, this is fun and all. In 1889, they will buy a house in Warwickshire and begin to make extensive renovations, which lead people there to describe it as looking like a southern plantation. Hmm. They grow rare orchids. They have greenhouses. They have stalls for 40 horses. The Lowes will also have a townhome in London, a shooting lodge in Scotland. Oh, yeah. They bring the cook over from Savannah because apparently the South does have the best food. And biscuits just don't mean the same thing in England.
True. True story. Has she tried the Yorkshire pudding, though? Because,
dude, it's
biscuity.
Flaky biscuits. I had no idea. Somebody told me we were having Yorkshire pudding, and I kept looking for the pudding, and I'm like, oh, it's bread. It's like, okay.
Such a surprise.
Before I trash on William here, I want to give a little context. William was sometimes a generous guy. I mean, it's trashy divorces, so you know where the story is going to end up. It's going to go wrong soon, but during this time, William will regularly supply coal for needy families in the district. He will host neighboring towns for great feasts and fireworks. He might not all be bad. But Daisy's, to me, the real hero here. Like, her hubby's kind of shit, but that's not going to stop her from doing the things she's always done. Like, she's having fun hosting hunting parties and dances, but Daisy's always volunteered. She's always been a helper, helping hand club, sorority. She's going to devote more and more of her time to charity work, regularly visiting a woman with leprosy. She will feed and care for the poor in a neighboring village. She will join a local nursing association. William does not like this. He expresses his disdain for female busybodies who dirty their hands working with the poor and oppressed. How do you think Daisy feels about this?
Probably very good.
Now it's on. Now I'm going to do more. So Daisy begins working with the Camberwell Working Girls Club. It's a club for poor inner city girls. And as much help as she is providing, Daisy really gets that she's receiving the benefits. She's growing way more confident in herself and her abilities. With the hearing loss, I'm in a marriage I don't really like, but she's growing in something as an adult. Like, this is every troop leader with scouts. Like, thanks for being our troop leader. Nah, y'all do me more for me than you even know.
Yeah.
Daisy's going to head on back to the United States to set up a hospital for returning wounded soldiers in the Spanish-American War. Things kind of roll for a while. Racing horses, friends with a future king, the couple will have no children. Maybe she can't have them. Maybe this one's on him. No one really knows, but they've drifted apart and lead very separate lives.
Which I don't think was that uncommon in the era, especially for well-to-do people, because you did kind of end up in these marriages of alliance or whatever that weren't really about, hey, snowflakes.
Well, by 1895, William is drinking and cheating with sincere enthusiasm.
Okay, well, that's...
Yeah, okay. You know it's coming. But social customs do not look too highly on divorce. And William wants one, and they're both really unhappy. And this is when I think you and I both agree, as the CEOs of Trash Candy, that sometimes we're pro-divorce. Go find your bliss. If the relationship is not working for either
100%.
One of you, go do your thing.
We're really here more for the trashy part than the divorce part. Like, neither of us has any problem with the notion of divorce. It's,
no.
It's people behaving badly that we love.
Okay, well, hold on. Because here we get to William behaving. Like, he's already been behaving badly, but one day, William's sister is feeling really down, which makes sense. Her 9-year-old son has passed away. And William's like, hey, sis, I got you. I'm going to give you a spa day. So in 1898, William takes off with his sister to spa it up, raise her spirits a little bit, which is totally a nice thing to do. But this is the day that will end the marriage. Because at the spa, William meets a beautiful young widow.
I am so glad that this involves a person who's not his sister. Thank you.
Who is also taking a spa day.
All right.
And her name is Anna Bateman.
The merry widow Anna Bateman.
And she's on the hunt for a husband.
Chilling in Bath or whatever.
William, despite actually already being married.
What?
Finds the beautiful young widow Anna Bateman charming and delightful. So totally cool that by 1901, Anna Bateman has moved into the home that he shares with Daisy. Ooh. And into his social set in London. And even though Daisy is still his wife, Anna is now his plus one at all the London society, country house, hunting, fox, drinking card party events.
And is living in his marital residence where his wife also lives?
Yep.
Interesting.
So this is kind of a really public way of saying you hate your wife. Mm. So he's drinking even more. And friends say, like, if such a thing as an intervention existed, they would have staged one. Like, everyone's worried about him.
About
Anna
him?
Replaces Daisy.
What about her? Who's worried about Daisy?
Anna will move into the home. She's his plus one. But the breaking point is about to get fucking nasty. Anna will take over as mistress of the home. Not just a house guest, but as lady of the house. And Daisy will move to sleeping in the servants' quarters of her own home.
Oh my God. Because protocol was such a big deal back then that that's a physical demotion, isn't it?
Oh my God. It's one thing to move your mistress in as a guest and we're playing a weird menage a trois game that I have not authorized.
Right.
It's another thing to move your mistress in. It's Catherine of Aragon, Henry VIII, and Anne Boleyn, right? Now your mistress is in charge of my home? The fuck? Okay. Daisy's eventually going to be like, I'm out of here.
You think?
She packs her bags and she's going to go stay with friends.
I'd get on a boat.
Yeah, and family. Daisy certainly is like, divorce is on the horizon. Society customs be damned. And she sends a letter on to William. Similar to the beginning of their relationship. Like, let's wait a year before we make a decision.
My dearest Billy.
Well, Billy is like, sure, but let's at least formally separate and live apart.
She's like, no problem.
Which they do. Yeah.
Watch me go.
100%. So old Billy, in a classic husband move, is withholding all financial support from Daisy unless she agrees to a divorce, which can't happen because of the laws at the time unless she proves adultery and desertion.
Do they have cameras yet? Yeah, they do. There are cameras at this time.
Adultery and cruelty. Like, she's got to name Anna Bateman.
Yeah.
And for the Gordon family and the Lowe family and the Bateman family,
nobody's
willing to do that.
Yeah, like, you really did have to basically put on a criminal prosecution of your spouse back then to make this happen. And I mean, it was a scandal. Like, there was no way around it.
So remember, Juliet is a Scorpio.
Hmm.
So what did I say? When the hurt happens, there's no going back. But all the families are prominent. And Daisy's like, fine, I'll give you your damn divorce. So they file for legal separation in 1902. Billy will cough up a little dough then. She uses that to rent a home in London. But divorces, because of all the legal ticker tape, take a long time. And Billy's sick, like, in general bad health. Drinking has ruined him. He's lost his good looks. And even with his hot new side piece, things aren't looking real great for Wills. He will commit to a support agreement for Daisy in 1903, where she will get £2,500 a year, the low home in Savannah, and stocks and securities. Not bad, right?
I feel like it's going to be, though. So
yeah, if it had only worked out that way. So old Willie suffers a possible stroke in 1903. She will hold off on the divorce for a moment because she doesn't feel it's fair to divorce him when he can't defend himself.
Yeah.
Like, you've suffered a stroke. Like,
well, and also hitting him with a bunch of legal stuff while he's recovering. Like, I completely understand why
Daisy's
she was like,
I'm not going to do that.
I was going to wait a year anyway.
We can put it off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he's like, okay, if we can put it off, he's like, I'll still take care of you. It'll be fine. Thanks for understanding.
Still take care of you. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's a stand-up thing. Thanks for letting me do this. I got you.
What happens next?
Oh, Billy passes away in June of 1905 at the age of 45.
Wow.
But the divorce settlement has never been completed.
I was going to say, does that give her everything instead of half or whatever?
No. Oh. Because of all the bluster about it, Juliet still is legal wife and now widow. But when old Billy's will is read, he's changed it to leave nothing to Daisy.
What?
And instead, everything, and I mean everything to
the mistress,
marry ye old widow, Anna Bateman, except for a tiny allowance that Juliet gets that has to be administered by Anna.
Oh. You did say that Juliet was born into money, though, right? Some?
Yes.
Okay.
But how is this going to work for a Scorpio gal? Any guesses? Daisy is going to take her dead husband's ass to court.
Okay. So she sues the estate.
She says, when my husband died, I found that he had willed his entire estate to another woman. No one was going to get away with that. Against the advice of my friends, I decided to contest the will and eventually won a $500,000 settlement.
Good for you, Juliet Gordon Lowe.
So is the estate consisted of property in both England and the United States. The will was declared invalid in America because it had only been witnessed by two people.
Oh.
As required under British law, where American law at the time required three witnesses.
That's
spiderwebs and legalities.
Technicalities. I mean, good for her. Use what you got if you got multiple court systems to play with.
As the widow, Juliet is going to get the entire American portion of his estate.
It doesn't seem like that would be such a hardship for the British mistress, though. Like, ooh, I can't travel to Savannah. Hmm.
Well, Anna's going to get the entire English estate as directed under the will.
Right.
At the end of the day, Juliet's awarded by the courts the Lowe's Savannah property, a London home, and a sizable income.
Cool.
Okay, great. So Daisy's 45, very wealthy, and right now, a 45 middle-aged, if I had a ton of money,
sure,
Welcome cats.
Also.
And art.
She can't
and my
even,
gin factory.
She can't even hear your bullshit.
Like, she could have done anything.
Yeah.
She could have lived a very comfortable life being a socialite in Savannah.
Well, that's she also could have done nothing and not been very comfortable.
Mm-hmm. Been a cat lady in Savannah, done her thing, hung out with her family. She could have volunteered. But have you met Daisy? It ain't easy being green. Things are just about to get good. At the age of 51, she meets Lord Baden-Powell, who's founded the Boy Scouts in England. And he's looking for some sharp, sassy gals to promote in other countries the organization that his sister runs called the
Girl Guides.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And we're going to take this message of scouting to the world. So let's think about this for a hot minute, because this is where, like, I'm going to Ted Mosby, like, right place, right time. And it's the butterfly effect. You don't see what it means until you get to see what it means. But everything in her life has been leading her to right now. The Helping Hands Club, the badges in her secret sorority, volunteering in England. Every single thing is bringing her to this moment where she could do anything. But what does she do? A woman in her middle years, time period, no kids, plenty of money, and a telephone. That's what I'm saying. There's no such thing as wasted and washed up. It's about to come together for girls everywhere. So she comes back to Savannah. She's doing art, metalworks. She's living the best she can, like she's Daisy. But she'll run into Lord Baden-Powell again.
And by now, she can make broadswords in her own forge in the basement.
Queen of swords. Okay. And cookies.
All right.
So God, I love everything about this.
So Khaleesi.
So.
Chilling with the Boy Scouts founder.
Daisy Khaleesi Gordon-Lowe is like, how do I bring this to the United States? So she will finance this endeavor with her own cash. She heads back. The first thing she does is go right back to that telephone, calls her cousin Nina. She's like, I have something for the girls of Savannah and all America and all the world, and we're going to start it tonight.
And what is it? I found dragon eggs. I'm building a fire in the yard.
Thank you for making me laugh, because I was almost about to cry.
I saw that.
So Juliet envisions the Girl Scouts to be inclusive for all girls, open to girls of any race, background, financial situation, and ability. She wants to encourage girls to be independent, make their own choices, develop their own talents and skills. So instead of telling Girl Scout members what to do, she would ask, what do you want to do?
Which badge would you like?
No, that's it. So welcome to fucking badges.
Right.
Okay, so not too long ago, I needed a complete mental zone outbreak. And my recommendation, I was really charmed by the movie Troop Zero that came out not too long ago.
Which is on my list to watch, actually. Thank you.
Oh my God, Troop Zero. I laughed, I cried, but badges. I like badges. I still have all my badges from being a brownie and a Girl Scout and a troop leader. Okay, so Daisy will say, huh, the badge is not a reward for something you've done once or for an examination you passed. Badges are not medals to wear on your sleeve to show what a smart girl you are. A badge is a symbol. I can't.
Of
this
mastery.
This is not even tier worthy.
Right. It's a symbol of mastery of a skill, right?
A badge is a symbol that you have done a thing. It stands for often enough, thoroughly enough, and well enough to be prepared to give service in it. You wear the badge to let people know that you are prepared and willing to be called on because you are a Girl Scout. And scouting is not just knowing, but doing.
Is there a sourdough badge? Because I want a sourdough badge.
And not just doing, but being.
Is there a sauerkraut badge? Because I'd get that. I'm a pro.
Love the Girl Scouts. By March of 1912, Juliet has formed the first two American Girl Guide patrols with a total of 18 girls. She will establish their first headquarters, first guidebooks, travel all over to promote the Girl Scouting message. And by 1916, the Girl Guides had become the Girl Scouts and had over 7,000 members, and Daisy was its first president. Little fun fact for ya. Girl Scouts started selling cookies in 1917, not only to serve as a fundraiser for troops, but to learn real-life lessons about how money is earned and spent and managed.
I had no idea that Girl Scout cookies were 103 years old. And I enjoyed a few Thin Mints yesterday.
Yeah, you did.
I did.
As a former Girl Scout troop leader, I keep them in my freezer.
You do. You do. And occasionally I get a hankering, so.
There are still good Girl Scout cookies available in the world now. Go find your local troop. I guarantee you they've got some boxes of some stuff still sitting around. Reach out. They can help you. Now we come to the sad part of our story.
Sad part.
In 1923... Daisy will develop breast cancer.
Wow.
And seek treatment, doesn't tell a soul about it. She will pass away at the age of 66 in January of 1927.
She put a good fight on with it then.
An honor guard of Girl Scouts escorts her casket to Christ Church where she was married all those years ago. It's anarchy. 250 Girl Scouts leave school, get up in the middle of school that day, and walk out to attend her funeral. I have one more sad thing to say, and then I'm done with being sad. Daisy is buried.
In a pet cemetery?
No, Daisy's buried in her Girl Scout uniform with a note in her pocket from the Girl Scout headquarters, which reads, "You are not only the first Girl Scout, but the best Girl Scout of them all. Thanks, Daisy."
And happy St. Patrick's Day to ye.
Dude, I had such a long streak of no tears.
It's apparently over. We'd set it on fire, but it's all wet.
Your search is over. Daisy's niece Alice will sum up her aunt. Hers was a constructive love, a constructive energy, a constructive ideal. It was not only a particular person's happiness that she wanted, it was everyone's. So thank you.
Except that bastard ex-husband.
For real. Thanks, Daisy, for your contributions to the promotion of girls. Mm-hmm. Throughout the last 108 years, you're a badass lady. Everybody go get some cookies. Love your local Girl Scouts. It ain't easy being green. I'm giving 18 trash cans to William Lowe.
Okay.
For moving your mistress in the house to take over.
Not good. Not good.
18 trash cans being the number of Girl Scouts in the original Girl Guides in those two troops. 18 trash cans. Moving your mistress, man? Not cool.
But I mean, Henry VIII did it, so that went well. For everyone.
For Juliet Gordon Lowe, founder of an organization that provides so much to girls then and now. What do you think of giving? Halos, but they're all green.
Oh, I was going to be like 150,000 halos. I don't know.
150,000 green, shiny halos. Thank you, Juliet Gordon Lowe. I'm better for being a scout in all the stages of my life and for all my Girl Scouts out there. I bet you are too.
Thanks, Daisy.
You rock, Daisy. Daisy? That's what I got. That is the trashy not divorce of the founder of the Girl Scouts, Juliet Gordon Lowe.
All right. Well, how about we take a break?
So I can wipe all my snotty girl guide tears.
Wipe all your snotty girl guide tears.
Wash my hands and show be prepared interventions. Awesome.
We'll be back on the other side.
Cue music either way.
Cue the music.
It's time to start the music. It's time to light the lights. Stacy is gonna be back with the Muppet Show tonight.
Bump, boop, bump, boop. Bump. Is that a copyright infringement?
Not with my awesome off-key singing. Stacy, I have been fascinated with the twists and turns of this story for so long. It's so volatile, I can't even catch up. I'm turning to you as my trashy divorces expert to give me the details.
The low down, as it were. What?
The low down.
Huh. Yeah, today we're going to talk about an iconic relationship that has been a cornerstone of generations of children's lives. That of...
Sometimes adults. Don't discriminate.
It's true. Sometimes
it's not
adults.
Easy being green, Stacey.
So this is the relationship between actress, singer, and diva Miss Piggy and her now ex-partner of 40-some-odd years.
Oh.
Producer, reporter, and entertainer himself, Kermit the Frog.
Kermit the Frog.
I call it Abuse's Silent Song, the tortured love of Miss Piggy and Kermit the Frog. And just a note, there's some hard stuff in here.
Trigger warning.
Hi-ya! Oh. Some hard stuff in here.
Sorry for anybody that just woke up if you were using us to drift off
to. Oh, yeah. Apologies. That's her karate chop sound.
Hi. Yeah.
Anyway, let's do a little background on these two crazy kids before getting into the horrifying specifics of their long relationship. Kermit the Frog first came to public notice in May of 1955 when he landed a role on the Washington, D.C. live-action puppet show Sam and Friends. Kermit had a bit of an evolution during this early phase of his career in TV. Initially, he was performing as some sort of proto-lizard type character. I don't think that they quite knew where this Kermit character was going to go. But over time, he was able to grow that character in sort of an amphibian direction until eventually he could openly perform as a frog.
Can I just for fun give you a little bit more of an origin story?
Oh, I hope you will. Oh, I have more.
Kermit the Frog started out as Jim Henson's mother's green coat.
Yes, with
the beginning.
Ping pong ball cut in half, and that's his eyes. Yeah.
Jim Henson. Am I ahead of the game?
Well, you're acting as though this is some sort of puppet.
Green coat, lizard, amphibian like character. Here we go. I'm into the development.
Kermit hails from either a swamp in Leland, Mississippi, or somewhere in Louisiana, where he was part of a hatch of more than 2,300 siblings.
Born on the bayou.
When he was 12, he left the swamp and began chatting up humans, which I think most humans didn't know frogs could do, but there it is. He'd return home in time. Later,
if only Mark Twain had been around.
You're not even kidding. Later, Kermit would encounter a waylaid talent scout on some kind of hellish fishing expedition, played by Dom DeLuise in the biopic The Muppet Movie.
You can talk, frog!
Who would point him toward Hollywood. Kermit sets out from his swampy home, meeting up with his Muppet friends like Fozzie Bear along the way.
Moving right along in search of...
Animal, Sam the Eagle, so many great characters.
You're doing it in a Studebaker.
Sure. Once he gets to Hollywood, the legendary head of Worldwide Studios, Lou Lord, who was played by Orson Welles in the biopic, signed them using his standard rich and famous contract.
The standard rich and famous contract.
And away they went. I gotta say, I'm surprised we haven't covered Lou Lord yet on Trashy Divorces. I feel like guys like that are why the studio system had to die. Okay. I mean, spider webs.
Move over, Louis B. Mayer. You heard about Lou Lord?
Meanwhile, in Iowa.
Oh. Farmland.
A little pig named Pigatheus Piggy Lee was born.
Wait a minute, what?
Pigatheus Lee. She would later explain that Pigatheus was Greek for river of passion, although it's not clear why her parents would want that in a child.
It's a little problematic for a pig.
Her father died when she was just a wee lass.
Aww.
And her mother began entering her in beauty contests, I think an early momager. I know you love that.
There you go.
Momager. Urging her on as a superstar.
You can be a star, baby.
Little Pigatheus's emotional needs were, at best, an afterthought. And Miss Piggy grew up with a keen sense that her feminine wiles could help her along, but also with a seething rage that often erupted into violence.
Dun-dun. This is some intense imago.
Miss Piggy got herself to Hollywood and fell in with the Muppets around 1974.
Oh.
By 1976...
There are worse crowds to fall into.
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, they were a rough gang in Hollywood back then. Just young and up-and-comers.
You heard about those ruffian Muppets?
Like, yeah. Some kind of acid-fueled rat pack. anyway.
Well, I don't know. You met Dr. Teeth.
There you go. By 1976, she had landed a small part in the chorus for The Muppet Show itself.
Oh, sure.
And similarly to Kermit's earlier transition of, you know, proto-lizard to actual, like, frog.
Right, right.
She convinced the writers to grow her part, and what she was doing, she was always hitting on Kermit, stage manager and star.
Producer, wink, wink. Uh-huh.
Yeah. So always hitting on him, and he wasn't into it, so he'd sort of rebuff the event. And she, this sort of turned into a gag, and she was like, hey, writers, see how good this is?
See our chemistry?
See how this works? So, it was a big hook. During her time with the Muppets, she will frequently be caught on camera in fits of anger, shouting, hi-ya! Yeah. While landing a karate chop onto someone, often Kermit. Sometimes these blows send him flying through the air. Talk about a different time in television.
There's a lot going on.
There's a lot. There's a lot happening
with the psychedelic
here.
Drug gang of the Muppets.
Also, it's very dark in an interpersonal way. As early as season one, Kermit is the recipient of fairly brutal physical attacks from his purported paramour.
Yeah.
These were common enough that it became something like a running gag. In Mel magazine in 2015, relationship coach Tina Leckie said of the pair, in a relationship, what you put up with, you end up with. Kermit is allowing this to happen, so it continues. I get what she's saying, but it sounds a little victim-blamey to me.
Again, we get trashy divorces.
It's never
okay. If you are not with the partner that you are meant to be with, go follow your bliss. It's never okay
to hit your partner.
No.
Ever.
No.
By the end of the 1970s, Miss Piggy was by far the most famous Muppet around, and Miss Piggy gear was flying off the shelves. She had a book on the New York Times bestseller list. Like, this was the heyday of Miss Piggy, late 70s, early 80s. Very heady time for Miss Piggy. Meanwhile, a much older Kermit the Frog.
Oh, sensitive professor man.
In spite of her penchant for conflict, he was only too happy to attach himself to this ingenue and enjoy a second round of celebrity.
Oh, he's pulling a Frank Sinatra.
Yeah. Mia Farrow.
It ain't easy being green.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This was not just a stunt of a relationship, though. Somehow these two put together a multi-decade love affair that featured several weddings, all of them apparently fake in one way or another, and even a high-profile breakup in 1990. By that point, Miss Piggy was looking at the changing landscape for women in the 90s and felt constrained by her then nearly 15-year-long relationship to, again, a much older Kermit. I feel like we've told this story a bunch of times. You've got Mariah Carey and Tommy Mottola. You've got Cher and Sonny. There's this older, sort of more experienced, more professionally
developed man. Trying to guide your career.
Yeah, trying to run your career for you, take you in directions.
Often that person beats up on the running of the career. Like,
I'm just saying.
This is a little problematic in a bunch of ways.
This is a very normal source, like a creative difference is a very normal source of conflict.
Okay.
And relationships between creatives. It's a common cause for divorce. What's interesting, though, with Kermit and Miss Piggy is that they worked things out, right? The others we just mentioned divorced.
Right.
Not these two? Yeah, they put it back together for the next quarter century. They were together until August of 2015.
Love left us up where we belong.
When Miss Piggy took to Instagram.
Oh, no.
With a bit of an announcement.
Miss Piggy.
After careful thought, thoughtful consideration, and considerable squabbling, we've made the difficult decision to terminate our romantic relationship.
Oh, no.
We'll continue to work together on television and in all media, now known or hereafter devised, in perpetuity throughout the universe. However, our personal lives are now distinct and separate, and we will be seeing other people, pigs, frogs, et al.
So they consciously uncoupled?
Mm-hmm. This is our only comment on this private matter, unless we get the right offer.
Then we're open game. Name your price.
Thank you for your understanding. Kermit was soon linked to a sow called Denise, although that relationship wrapped up the following spring.
Oh my, scandalous.
Miss Piggy and actor Topher Grace had some sort of playful social media interaction that may or may not have gone anywhere, but let's be honest.
Topher.
The age difference there would be a lot like Demi Moore and Topher's That 70s Show co-star Ashton Kutcher.
Totally true.
And would likely have ended the same way. in heartache.
So much heartache.
So much heartache.
For pigs and frogs and humans.
Oh my God. At a Hollywood event promoting her nighttime talk show, Up Late with Miss Piggy, which Kermit executive produced, they took...
Of course he did.
They took turns...
Have you heard about my rich and famous contract?
They took turns trying to explain the dynamics to an eager press.
Oh.
Kermit admitted that it can be tough to work with an ex, but that they're both professional adults. Piggy replied, one of us is certainly professional.
Oh, Miss Piggy, shade.
She went on to, oh, such shade. She went on to say, dating moi is like flying close to the sun. It was inevitable that Kermit would drop down to the ground while I stayed in the heavens.
Can I see that you just for a second?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because I think that I finally have found my Piggy voice.
Never taken my phone before.
Okay, oh, no, I never have.
Cool.
Dating moi is like flying close to the sun.
Very close.
It was inevitable that Kermit would drop down to the ground while I stayed in the heavens.
It's pretty good. It's pretty good.
I may cut all that. I don't know, but... Oh, I like the moi. I've become so...
I'd forgotten the moi, but yes, that's so classically...
I have become so skilled in my pronunciation.
Sure.
Tutelage through trashy divorces that... Moi.
Okay, so their breakup obviously was a lightning strike into the heart of American culture.
Oh, God, it was a lightning strike into my heart?
Oh, for sure.
Kermit and Piggy?
We loved them. Kermit and Miss Piggy had been together for... decades, and they remain incredibly powerful media figures. Still, it seems like many observers had held their tongues for years at what they viewed as a relationship featuring significant domestic violence. Noah Berlatsky in The New Republic responded to the revelations this way, quote, the fact that the Piggy-Kermit relationship could be seen as harmless fun had a lot to do with the fact that the violence in their relationship was female on male rather than the other way around. If Kermit were constantly hitting Piggy hard enough to knock her off her feet and into nearby furniture or shrubbery, there would be cultural pushback.
Me too. Hashtag.
Indeed, while many acclaim Miss Piggy as a feminist icon, Berlatsky encouraged everyone to take a deeper look, writing,
oh.
In the end, it's better for everyone that Kermit and Piggy have gone their separate ways. For the frog, it means the end of a long, abusive relationship. And for everyone else, it means the end of a comedy spectacle which mocked both men and women for violating traditional gender roles. After 40 years, it's time to stop laughing at men who are victims and women who aren't.
Well, I applaud that.
Me too. That's why I included it.
That's a good message.
Up Late with Miss Piggy only lasted into the 2016 season, so just over a year. But both Kermit and Piggy are attached to the Muppet Babies project, which has been airing on Disney since 2018. It's
right.
Computer animated. It's possible that both of them took the analysis around their relationship to heart and have opted, for now at least, to keep their dirty laundry out of the press. I feel like this one is actually way trashier than we realized because we were being indoctrinated into domestic violence as children. Researching this story really just made me sad. Miss Piggy has always chased stardom like a heat-seeking missile, but what Kermit allowed himself to endure in being her partner is really, really rough.
You know what would have been rougher?
I don't know.
Being the poster boy for Dot Copper's frog legs. Just saying.
I give this former couple 2,300 Mississippi or Louisiana-made trash cans with the hope that both of them have been enjoying significant amounts of therapy for the last few years.
Born on the Bayou. That was a great story.
I mean...
I will always be grateful to Miss Piggy and Kermit for doing the original and best run through the fields of flowers to embrace each other scene that's ever happened in the history of movies. It's something to see Kermit's first reaction to Piggy on stage in the beauty pageant that, like, Burt Reynolds is... has something to do with. I don't know why this is coming to me from my childhood mind.
Don't know either.
They're legends. I feel bad that Kermit was abused for all those years.
He's been abused for decades, yeah.
Hashtag me too.
Yeah. And it's weird. Some of the criticism around the relationship was, well, it seemed like he wasn't like super committed. And like, no, he's getting hit all the time. How could he super commit?
He's living in fear.
Mm-hmm. Anyway.
So Miss Piggy's a bully?
Hard out to Kermit. I think that Miss Piggy is a domestic abuser. Heart out to Kermit.
I'm going to have to research their sun, moon, and rising signs. I feel like there's a deeper story here.
Miss Piggy was once asked what sign she was born under, and she said that she was not born under a sign. She was born over a sign. She did not say what it was.
Oh, my. I have some ideas for that one. Stay tuned for Ask Alicia About the Stars on Trashtrology on Patreon.
Miss Piggy edition.
There are three signs that could be just from hearing that, and I'm going to do some deeper research. Stacey, that was amazing. Thank you.
Thank you. Just a shout out to
hard-hitting expose.
Thanks to, everyone who, like me, just loved Muppet stuff when you were kids but hadn't really paid attention as adults. Like, if you go back and watch some of that, it's rough. It is rough. We were not getting good messages as kids. Hi-ya! It's not easy being green.
Interesting times we live in.
Is that it for our St. Patrick's Day?
Give me a minute.
Go drink some green beer, you shut-ins.
Watch some Muppets. Okay, if I was going to give a recommendation, if you are shut in, find some old Muppet Show episodes. Who's great? John Denver, Linda Ronstadt singing Blue Bayou. Ooh, The Cat Came Back is one of my particular favorites. You can go down a whole rabbit hole, frog hole, Muppet hole,
Piglet
of Muppets,
hole.
Pig hole that will delight you to no end. Oh, and also, if you're really desperate, come on over to Patreon, our bit.ly link of...
A bonus content over there, yeah. We're pulling some of our older stories that have been behind that paywall. We're pulling those out because a lot of people are having their lives disrupted and maybe you just want some distraction.
Check us out, patreon.com/trashydivorces.
Well, check your show notes for... I'll have the short link there. It's going to be bit.ly/... We'll make it work.
So we're going to post some extra free public content over there.
Every week.
Legit. Patreon has like five different... You like us on Trashy Divorces on Sunday. We have an entirely different podcast Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday over there. So if you need some extra content, please consider putting us in your ears. For all of y'all, Girl Scouts and Muppet fans, thank you for tuning in for yet another week. Y'all are the very best.
You are. And we hope that you will use a lot of hand sanitizer while still keeping it trashy.
Oh, keep it so trashy.
Quit hoarding toilet paper.
Until we see you on Sunday for our season 5 finale. Keep it trashy, friends. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in.
Indeed. Bye.
Hi-ya. Trash Pandas, thanks for listening. Trashy Divorces is written and produced by us, Stacey and Alicia, for Hemlock Creatives.
You can contact us at trashydivorces@gmail.com. Our art is by Sydney V. Smith, Sydney V. Smith at carbonmade.com.
And our music is used with permission of Ratsy. You can find her at Ratsy Store on Instagram.
Big thanks to our Season 5 associate producer, Melanie Z.
Check out episode sources, photos, soundtracks, merch store, and more at TrashyDivorces.com.
Need more trash candy?
Our Patreon community includes some of the bestest humans around, as well as a bunch of bonus content every week.
Join the fun at Patreon.com/TrashyDivorces.
Last but not least, come play with us on social.
We are at TrashyDivorces at Instagram, which Alicia mostly runs.
Twitter, which Stacey mostly runs.
And on Facebook, which we split.
We also have a Trashy Divorces discussion group on Facebook if you want to chat with other Trashy Divorces listeners.
Thanks again for listening.
Keep it trashy, y'all.